So the plan for this session is that I'm going to first offer you a short guided meditation to help us settle down a bit. Then I will talk about how to practice on an online retreat, give you some more details and tips about that. And at the end of this session, there's going to be plenty of time for your questions. So you might have questions about online retreats or sitting meditation or walking meditation or the retreat practicalities or anything else. All questions would be welcome at that point. And just to ask once more, since I again changed my microphone, do you hear me fine this time? Excellent. So let's settle down into the sitting meditation. Of course, standing and lying down postures are just as welcome if they are more appropriate for you at this time. Just remembering the possibility of awareness. Remembering the possibility of awareness, of being aware of this body. These sensations. Remembering the possibility to be aware of these sounds. This landscape of sounds, hearing them. Feeling the body, sitting perhaps. The areas where the body touches the ground. Feeling the hands, perhaps touching each other or touching the lap. If you notice any unnecessary tension in the body, anywhere in the body, gently inviting them to soften. We can't force them to soften, but we can gently invite them to soften if they want to. For instance, letting the brow soften. Inviting the eyes to soften. the jaw to soften. The shoulders to soften. The chest. The stomach. The back, the hips, but also remembering to maintain the upright posture, upright meditation posture. That's so important for the clarity of mind, for energy in the mind. Seeking a good balance between straightness and relaxation. And perhaps, as Greg suggested in the morning, if it feels helpful to you, finding a gentle anchor, such as the breath or the hands touching or the entire body or hearing the landscape of sounds. Whichever option feels most easeful for you. This gentle anchor is like that stick in the stream, something more stable in the constant flow of changing experience. A useful reference point for us. Help to stabilize the mind, to calm the mind. To have that anchor be one part of our experience, one part of the wider, bigger field of experience. Seeing the river, but also seeing the stick in the river. So that stick is standing steadily in the river, deep in the mud of the river bed, by the river is flowing through it. And whenever you find your attention wandering, just gently bring it back to the stick, to the anchor. Finding the anchor again. There it is. Stable and safe anchor. But also seeing the wider field of experience around that anchor. Wherever your attention has gone, you can always begin again. Re-remember awareness. Remember the anchor. Remember to feel the experience. So on the previous online retreats where I have been teaching or assisting, I have learned quite a bit about people's experiences in the small groups and in the virtual meditation hall. And I just, in this session, wanted to share with you some of the things that I've learned that might be helpful for you during this retreat, some things to pay particular attention to, or some pitfalls maybe that you could avoid. And I'd like to start by saying something about the comparing mind, which I've noticed to be quite prevalent, quite common on these online retreats, because it is quite natural, because people's circumstances are so different. So easy, it's so easy to think that somebody else has the better deal and I have the worst deal. But like, for instance, on one retreat, I noticed that I heard from people in the small group, some people who were practicing, you know, in a daily life setting with many activities and interaction with others, would be feeling that, oh, I'm not getting such a good retreat. Those people who are practicing in silence and seclusion the entire time, their mind can settle down so much more and calm down so much more, and they can get deeper insights that way. And then on the same retreat, some people who were actually practicing in silence and seclusion were feeling that, I wish there was more happening in my days, because like, if I had more things happening, I could learn so much more compared to now when there's like nothing happening. And you know, there's really no right or wrong circumstances. As we have said, you know, you can always, like, wherever you are, you can find a way to practice in a fruitful way to get a lot of valuable learning. But if you spend your time comparing, you know, and wishing you were somewhere else and being aversive to the situation you're in, that might not be the most fruitful or pleasant way of practicing. It can be quite a lot of suffering to be really unidentified, deeply unidentified with the comparing mind, or the aversion to one's own circumstances, or the greed to somebody else's circumstances. You might know that when the Buddha talked about the causes of unnecessary suffering, he told us greed and aversion are our core forces. They're causing us suffering. So a great, great way to see that, great place to see that. And Greg had this really lovely image of like, everything can be included in our practice, even though like, if it's a neighbor that's like really noisy when we are trying to do sitting meditation and the neighbor is really noisy, can we, you know, extend our arms, as Greg described, to include that in our practice, to include that hearing and that irritation that might arise and that aversion that might arise? Can we include all of that in our practice too? There's another manifestation of comparing mind can arise in a situation where you have been on an on-site retreat before, where you have been in a physical retreat before, for instance, in the friendship inn here in Finland or some other retreat center. So if this is your first online retreat after physical retreats, you might, I mean, it would be very natural to compare the two experiences. And some people might fear that this online format is just, you know, a shadow of the real thing. But since we are not able to get the real deal, we get the shadow of the real thing. But in fact, what I have come to see that it's not that, you know, the physical retreat is better and the online retreat is worse, but they are both really valuable in their own particular ways. We can't really say that one is better and that one is worse, but they are different and valuable in their own particular ways. And actually, many people have been doing these online retreats have felt that this is so valuable that I want to do more of this. And Niroda has been getting many requests to keep offering online retreats even after the COVID time. And the same has happened in all the centers I know of in other countries. And there's a plan to keep offering these online retreats precisely because people have found them so valuable. So even though we can benefit in many ways from those physical retreats where we have that silence and seclusion, we can benefit in different ways in, for instance, the home environment. And it's another opportunity for learning here is to see the ideas that we have about how a retreat should look like. We might have ideas about how our experience should look like or how our retreat should look like, and that we should be calm and not have many thoughts and not be reactive and whatever. And if those ideas don't match the reality of our experience, that's when we usually suffer. So this could be an instance of delusion, which is yet one cause of suffering with the Buddha named. So if we have some ideas about how our experience should look like and our experience looks different, and then there's the gap in between these two, that's usually a big cause for suffering. So if you're practicing in your home environment, at home, for instance, at your own summer cottage, for instance, there are many impulses that might arise or would probably arise. Like you would be walking around, like walking in your room or your living room or your kitchen or sitting there, and you might experience the impulse to go and turn on the TV. Or you might experience an impulse to go to the fridge and get something to eat. Or you might experience, and you might see some dust in the corner and experience the impulse to go and start vacuuming. And, or you might be feeling restless and get the impulse to go get your cell phone. Or experience the impulse to pick up a book and start reading something. So in these instances, it's really critical to stay mindful, as mindful as possible, and really not to automatically just to act out on those impulses. You know, you can just see, oh, there's the impulse to go to the fridge. It came and it went, and you don't need to go to the fridge. Like, we are not robots, we don't need to act on those impulses. So the more stable and calm our mind is, the less we actually end up acting on those impulses. And with mindfulness, we can actually practice some discernment. Is it wise to act on this impulse or is it not? And this is such an important skill for life. You know, is it really wise to go to the fridge in this moment or is it not? Is it really wise to get my cell phone in this moment or is it not? And sometimes it is, you know, wise to go to the fridge if your blood sugar is low or it's the mealtime or something. But sometimes that impulse is just there arising out of restlessness or boredom or greed, in which case it's much wiser to let go of that impulse. So really, really good practice for life. And then the talking situations can also be a great source of learning. For some of you, it might be talking might only happen in a small group, but for some of you, it might be more often than that. I guess I want to start by saying, like repeating what we said in your welcome letter, that it's even if you're living with your family or friends, it's really helpful if you're able to have parts of your day where you're going to be completely silent. So agree on times when you're going to be speaking and when you're going to be silent, because even one period of the day where you're able to be silent, this can be really supportive for your mindfulness practice. And we want to be able to extend our mindfulness practice to the interactive situations and as well. So trying to practice mindfulness while we are speaking and while we are listening. And also another really important skill to develop, because we tend to spend so much of our everyday life either speaking or listening. So while you speak and while you listen to others, just being mindful in that situation, like seeing what arises in the body, what arises in the mind, what arises in the heart, what kinds of emotions, what kinds of thoughts, what kinds of reactions, what kind of impulses. And again, here you might observe, like while you're listening to somebody, observing impulses to start speaking. And again, in that situation, you can make the discernment, is it wise to act on this or not? Is it wise to say this thing or not? And in the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path, one of the path factors is that of wise speech. And wise speech refers to speech that is first of all truthful. We don't want to lie. And speech that is useful. We don't want to be just like gossiping for no good reason. Speech that has kind intentions, comes out of kindness, and for instance, not out of anger or irritation or ill will. Speech that is well worded and not divisive, but more like unifying. So again, one practice that it can be enhanced on a retreat container like this that you can definitely take to your life after the retreat. And you know, just in general, we are on this path that's heading to the direction of less suffering and more well-being. Like with the help of the retreat container, these practice periods we have together and these teachings that we are offering here, just in general, bringing more mindfulness to your life, seeing what arises in the body and in the mind and the heart in different situations, becoming more and more aware what causes suffering, what causes well-being. So as Greg said, we tend to repeat some things over and over, but it's somehow the case that some things need to be repeated, and sometimes we only get after hearing them 100 times or 4 or 5 years or something. But it's really not just about the formal sitting periods. Like you might notice that if you're sitting in silence and when the bell rings, there might be a tendency kind of to, you know, get up and start doing stuff and start to get useful again and forget all about mindfulness at that point. But our invitation for you on this retreat is to really try to stick to the mindfulness, remember the mindfulness in all the in-between times too, no matter whether you're taking a shower or taking out the garbage or watering the garden or eating or anything else, you can take the mindfulness there, you can remember the mindfulness there, you can remember to feel the body, to be mindful of hearing, to be mindful of seeing, to be mindful of smelling, to be mindful of tasting, to be mindful of what's going on in the mind in terms of thoughts and emotions and impulses and mind states. One area we might have fixed ideas about is how a proper retreat should look like. For instance, and this applies to some people and doesn't really apply to other people so well, but like if we have been in a physical retreat, in a retreat center, we might have this idea that, okay, I should, you know, stay indoors most of the time and at most go to my own yard to do walking meditation there, to keep things simple, not to get too distracted. And this might be really wise and this might be a really good idea. But it's good to pay attention to the possibility of sometimes maybe getting too inflexible or maybe getting too attached to certain ideas about how things should look like. Like, for instance, I've encountered people who felt that, okay, it would be really great for their body to go to the gym, to work out a little bit during the retreat, but they can't since it's a retreat, so it's forbidden to go to the gym, right? So in this sort of situation, I would encourage you to reflect on like, really, what is wise? What is wise? What is good? What is supportive for your well-being? What is supportive for your retreat? And sometimes the answer might be that the wise and supportive thing is actually to go to the gym mindfully instead of just like staying in and doing some more sitting meditation. And again, sometimes the answer might be that it's more wise to stay in, not to get distracted too much and do more sitting meditation. So another great skill to develop for life, to see where our actions come from and making informed decisions about like what is wise action and then what is not. Like if we feel like going for a swim, in some moment we might feel like going for a swim. So seeing where that impulse comes from, where that wish comes from. Maybe it comes from wisdom, maybe it arises from wisdom, you know. It's been really hot for a really long time and it would be so good for the body and the mind to get some refreshing. So it seemed like a good idea to go for a mindful swim. And another instance, it might be that you're just feeling so restless and bored and it feels so unpleasant that you just like want to do, you just want to get out, get away from your experience and go for a swim and just like seeing what's happening, like what's the force behind. And of course, like if you have been feeling unpleasant for too long, it can be really wise to give ourselves a break, you know, refresh the body and the mind. But sometimes if it's just out of restlessness or aversion, it's maybe better to let go of that impulse. And we have also talked about the schedule, how there is a sample schedule on the web page that you could take and modify to suit your own circumstances. And it can be very, very helpful to have a schedule of some sort on an online retreat like this. Because especially when we start out on a retreat and if we are not a very experienced practitioner, there could be so much, you know, there could be sleepiness in the mind, there could be a restlessness in the mind, there could be, you know, boredom, aversion, greed, delusion in the mind. And we don't really want to be at the mercy of those forces too much. So if we don't have a schedule of any sort, we might, you know, end up spending our days in a quite a scattered way. But if we have a schedule and we have decided to stick to the schedule, then, you know, sleepiness and restlessness are not as effective as stopping us from doing that. So for many people, I would really recommend having a schedule of some sort. But then for some of you, especially for those of you who have been practicing for longer, it can be a really valuable practice to actually not have a schedule or not have a like a really tight schedule and practice, you know, feeling in, practice flexibility in what you're gonna do next, like really practicing listening to your intuition, like, well, what would be the most supportive thing to do right now? Would it be a sitting meditation? Would it be walking meditation? Would it be lying down meditation? Would it be yoga? Would it be, you know, mindful movement of some sort? Would it be going for a swim? Would it be a break, you know, going for a nap? Another valuable practice to think about if you're more experienced, especially. And maybe last bit about the small groups that are really there to support you and your practice. And just to repeat that you don't need to have any particular question or anything to share to attend to a group. And I'm just mentioning that today is the first full day of the retreat, and usually the group on the first full day of the retreat, there's the least amount of people in that group. So today might be a particularly good time to go and give it a try and have a bit more time for you there in the group. And especially, like, it's totally open for any of you today, but especially if this is your first retreat ever or you're quite new to the meditation practice, might be a really great opportunity to go check out the group today. And one thing we didn't mention yesterday because there wasn't time for everything is that even though these small groups and these question and answer sessions in the virtual meditation hall, they are the primary means of individual support for you. But sometimes there can be situations where you have something important to ask, but it feels too private to share it in a group. So in that sort of situation, we would be happy to try to offer you an individual meeting. So if you feel that you have something important to ask, but it's just too confidential for a small group, please let us know. Please let Greg or me know. You could either use the chat, private chat in the Zoom, or the web page, the form on the web page, or get in touch with us through Nella, and we could arrange time for a private meeting. Okay, at this point, I would like to open this up for questions. So you might have a question about online retreats or retreat practicalities or sitting meditation or walking meditation or the teachings or anything else. Everything would be welcome. And you could use your microphone. That's the preferred method. But you could also type your question in the chat box if that's a more comfortable option for you. That would be welcome as well. So would anybody have questions? You could just wave your hand or raise your hand or just start speaking if I don't see you. anything that seems unclear or confusing or you would need some more ideas for some situation or experience. If you like, you can also ask in Finnish and I would translate the summary to English.
Hello.
Yeah, please, Pia.
It's not really a question, but it's something that came to my mind when during the walking meditation, and I was kind of playing around with the anchors in walking meditation, and it was something you said about the sort of feeling the body inside like a dancer, and well, obviously I'm not a dancer, but the feeling is a sort of familiar for me from different sort of different situations, and maybe I was kind of thinking that sort of as an anchor in general, I think I'm moving more towards the sort of using the whole body as an anchor, and feeling, having sort of the dancing feeling. Is that really a meditation or meditation anchor, or is that like something too joyful or I'm kind of sort of having mixed feelings. Is that meditation or
Well, thank you, Pia. That is a great question, because we sometimes do have these assumptions that meditation should be quite serious, you know, or maybe neutral or even slightly unpleasant. but it can definitely feel joyful and enjoyable, and it's great. It's great if it does, because it makes it so much easier to be mindful, you know, and concentrated. I don't know if you have noticed, but it's usually so much easier to be mindful of pleasant sensations and pleasant experiences. Not always, but usually, like when it's a nice sunshine and warm, like there's the natural tendency of the mind to, more natural tendency to be present for that, compared to if it's like, you know, November and cold and raining. So definitely if you have an anchor option that feels more pleasant than some other anchor and more enjoyable and more easeful, that might be a really good choice of an anchor, because it would make it so much easier to stay mindful and concentrated. And the body in general, you know, is a great anchor for both sitting and walking meditation. Like the body, like the sense of the entire body, the whole of the entire body. So I don't see why not. I am wondering, Pia, if you have any other doubts about using the body as your anger.
Yeah, I certainly have a kind of many doubts also in general. So it's maybe I'm also searching the sort of the limits of meditation, and so it came to me sort of that it started to be very similar to what I was doing as a child. So I like to, or as a child also later on, so like walking barefoot. So that was in general occasions that has been a sort of a big joy for me, sort of having a feeling the soles of the feet. And I'm also wondering, sort of it came to me that I have often sort of preferred to walk more slowly than sort of 6 kilometers per hour or so, and I've been kind of wondering why it has been, and so, and it seems that so it came to me as a realization that I've been sort of entering the same sort of aiming at a sort of a similar mindfulness without noticing, without knowing that it's been the mindfulness that I have been looking for instead. For instance, when sort of walking in the woods at different sort of points in my life, and so it was kind of funny that it's like going to the same point from entering the same situation from different directions. And the sort of feeling good or not the feeling right thing. And also the joy.
Yeah, I hear a natural tendency towards, seeking mindfulness and deriving joy from there.
Yeah, that came to my mind, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Pia. And just for everybody, like if you have thoughts around, like, is this a good anchor, or would that be a better anchor, or that third thing, would that be the best anchor maybe, or if I should do this, or if I should do that, like a good general question to ask, like, what would be the most supportive for my mindfulness? What would be the most supportive for my practice? And usually that gives good guidelines and where to go. Anybody else? There's still time for any other questions or comments. I can't believe it that we have been this clear. Or then you're just really, really good and experienced. Well, I think if no one else has anything, I would like to invite you to make good use of this time by sitting together for a few more minutes that we have left. So awareness, becoming aware of change in the circumstances, the body settling into a particular posture, and the eyes closing down. And the effects of that change in the body and in the mind. What are you aware of right now? What's arising in the experience in the body or in the mind? Finding the anchor, the stability of the anchor. Our reference point in the midst of it all.